Front Range Outdoors is brought to you in part by Wild Montana's Island Range Chapter, uniting and mobilizing communities to keep Montana wild. Learn more at wildmontana.org/IRC. Also, Front Range Outdoors is sponsored by Great Falls Area State Parks, including Giant Springs, Tower Rock, First People's Buffalo Jump, and Sluice Boxes, providing year-round cultural, historical, and recreational experiences for the Great Falls area.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Front Range Outdoors on KGPR Great Falls. This is Amy Grisak, and today Gabe Vasacek joins us to speak with author and historian Ellen Baumler from Helena.
Thank you, Amy, for having me.
Thank you. So the weather is finally cooling off, and it's starting to feel kind of like that spooky season. So we wanted to have you in, well, we're chatting over the phone, but theoretically in the studio. So I just wanted to give everybody, though, a little bit of background for those few that don't know who you are. You were the interpretive historian for the Montana Historical Society from, 1992 to 2018?
That's right.
And you're also the author of some of our favorite books, and I believe number 8 just came out this past year, called The Life of the Afterlife in the Big Sky State.
Yep. Actually, it's number 13.
13.
Yeah.
Excellent.
How about that?
Oh, my gosh. Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
And so this, it looks like it came out, was it last November?
I think it came out a year ago, June, I think.
Okay.
So it's been out a while.
Excellent. Well, I just picked up a copy and have started to read through it and can't wait to dive in.
Oh, well, thanks. I enjoyed doing it. You know, it's a kind of a history of cemeteries and the way they evolved in Montana. So it's a subject that people don't really think about.
No, that's a good point, especially with the Native history background and then, of course, with the missionaries and everybody else that moving in. I think it's an excellent, excellent topic. I can't wait to read it.
Thank you.
So of course, with us being on Front Range Outdoors and with kind of an outdoor theme, we wanted to talk about some of these stories that happen in the outdoors, maybe at night. So what are some of your favorites?
Well, you know, I think one of my all-time favorite, well, I have two. One all-time favorite is the story about Joyce Walker, who just a person I don't really know, but she called me out of the blue one day and said, you know, I had this incident happen, and I want to tell you about it, and you're welcome to, you know, use the story. And she told me about how she and her dad used to go hunting a lot, and they would go bird hunting in the fall, and they had a special place where they went in a farmer's field, and they always had permission, and the farmer would move his livestock out of there so that they could hunt safely. And there were bushes that grew all the way around the perimeter of this large pasture, and they would walk the perimeter of this pasture and flush the birds out. So one time they were walking the perimeter, and something happened to her dad's gun, so he said, I'm going to go back to the car. And she was by herself, and she just kept on walking, and pretty soon she felt that there was something behind her. And she could hear, she knew exactly what it was. She could hear the hooves on the dirt. She could hear the tail swishing. She could hear it kind of snorting. And she knew that there was a horse behind her. And she didn't turn around. She just was aware of it, you know, and she kept on walking, and it kept on following her. And finally, she turned around, and there wasn't anything there. And so when her dad came back, she was really pretty spooked about it, and she told him what happened. And he said, well, you know, let's walk in the middle of the pasture and see, you know, if there are any animals around. So there was one of those places, you know, covered places where the animals can get out of the wind. And there was one of those, and they came to the front of it and began to walk around to the back, and there was the skeleton of a horse. And Joyce said, you know, she just felt that this horse had a message for her and wanted her to go and tell the farmer that he was there, because the farmer didn't know. And he hadn't known and had missed this horse. And so she felt like, you know, she really did a good turn for this, the spirit of this horse. So I think it's a really good lesson that, you know, we have to remember that not only do we have energy, mm-hmm. animals also have energy like that. And sometimes those things intersect. That's one of my favorite stories, I think.
I do love that.
Bringing some closure, as it were. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So I have another favorite.
Oh, very good.
The other one came from Tom Donovan. For folks up in Great Falls, they might know him. He's an author also, and wrote a couple of books on two volumes on hanging around Montana, or hanging around Big Sky, which is a history of the legal and illegal hangings, all the ones that have happened in Montana. And so he and I sort of have this, you know, weird interest. And we were sitting together one time at a book signing, and neither one of us were selling any books, so he said to me, you know, I have this story that happened to me. And he said, you know, I'd love to tell it to you, and you're welcome to use my name. You're welcome to tell it anytime you want. And it's really one of my all-time favorites. He grew up in Missoula, and when he was in high school, when he was 16, he had just gotten his driver's license, and so had three of his friends. And they really loved to go out in the fall and hunt and spend the week camping, weekend camping and that kind of thing. And they never planned anything ahead of time. And so this one day after school on Friday, they met and they thought, well, it's really going to be a good weekend. So maybe we'll go camping, you know, and we'll do a little hunting. And so they were very late in getting started. It was probably almost after dark. And they drove out of Missoula, and they could see the lights coming on behind them, you know. And they drove and they drove, and they cut off onto a dirt road, and they're driving up this hill, up this mountain, and they really didn't know where they were. They just kept driving. It was getting pretty late, so they decided they better pull over and find a place to camp. So they pulled off the road, and they happened upon this wonderful kind of meadow, and they got out to see if it would be a suitable place to camp. And they realized that this area had this really, really thick carpet of grass. It was the thickest grass they'd ever seen, and they were so excited. We're going to get a great night's sleep here. So they get all their stuff, and they put their four sleeping bags in a circle, and they build a little fire. And it was a great place to have a fire, too, because it was open with no trees overhanging or anything. And so they talked for a while, and then they crawled into their sleeping bags, and all four of them promptly fell asleep. Right at the stroke of midnight, all four of them sat bolt upright in their sleeping bags. And one of them said to the others, "Did you hear that?" And the others nodded. Yeah, they had heard it. And what it was the sound of a miner's pick hitting rock. And every time the pick hit the rock, it kind of ringed, you know. And they could hear it coming from somewhere underneath them. And they thought, what is a miner doing on this cold fall night in the middle of the dark, you know, mining? Why would somebody be doing that? And they kept talking about it, wondering about it. And finally, the curiosity got the better of them, and they put on their jackets and got their flashlights, and they went out to search to see if they could find where this sound was coming from. And they realized that this was an area that had been very heavily mined, and there were mining shafts all over the place, and they were being careful. And they were listening into each one, you know, to see if there was any sound coming out. And finally they came to this one, and they could hear the sounds of the miner's pick hitting rock way deep inside this mining shaft, and there was a ladder going down. And of course, you should never, ever, ever do this, but they decided they would go down and see if they could figure out why this miner was down there. So they started one after the other down this ladder, And they realized that there was water running down the sides of this tunnel, of this shaft, and they could hear the miner's pick hitting rock, ring, ring, ring. And they could hear the water as it ran down the sides and ended up in a puddle at the bottom of the shaft, and they could hear the water drip, drip, drip. And so they, one after the other, proceeded down this ladder, and as soon as the first one down stepped into this puddle, all the sounds stopped. The sounds of the miner's pick hitting rocks stopped. The only thing they could hear was the drip, drip, drip of this water. And they got really spooked, and they could see that there were tunnels running in all four directions, and they had no idea which direction the sound had been coming from. So they hightailed it back up the ladder, and they were really freaked out, and they got back to their campsite and banked up the fire and made some hot chocolate and talked about what they had just experienced. And they couldn't figure out why there would be a miner in the dark like that, in the cold. And so finally they crawled back in their sleeping bags, but they were so spooked, none of them slept a wink all night long, and they just waited until the sky began to streak a little bit, and they said, you know, let's just get out of here. This place isn't where we're supposed to be. So they gathered up their stuff, and they threw it in the car. And as they did that, it was beginning to get light, and they could see way up ahead, they could see the outline of buildings, and there was a Forest Service sign that said that the town of Coloma, the ghost town of Coloma, was just up ahead. And then they knew where they were. And they went back to their campsite to make sure the fire was out and that they hadn't left anything. And as dawn began to break, the horror of what they had done began to dawn on them, and they realized that they had been camping in the cemetery between Garnet and Coloma, and they had put their sleeping bags in the depressions where the graves were.
Oh.
And they had actually been sleeping with the dead.
Ooh, that's a good one.
That is a great one.
That is really
what
good.
A ghoulish prospect.
Yeah, and I thank Tom Donovan for sharing that with me.
Oh, that's excellent. Oh, but that's one of those, like you said, with them going down that ladder, you're just going, no, no, don't do that.
I know, I know. Not something that you should ever do.
No.
You tell the story very well, and I think that's what readers could expect with your books as well, is just in any good ghost story or anomalous tale, it's all in the telling, and you do a great job of it.
No, thanks. Well, I've been doing it a long time.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. So, oh, go ahead.
Oh, well, what initially sparked your interest in these types of stories?
Well, I guess when I was in high school, I had an experience with a couple of my girlfriends. One of my friend's fathers had passed away, and she called us over to the house, and she didn't tell us that it was this anniversary of her father's death. It was just a year. And we all walked into her mother's bedroom to get a basket of clothes that was sitting on the bed. We all walked in there, and as we walked into the room, we saw a depression on the bed. And it was like someone, you know, sat down.
Oh.
And we saw this, whatever it was, sit down on the bed and then get up, and the lights in the closet turned on and off.
Wow.
And, you know, it was weird because we sort of looked at each other. My friend Susie said, you know, this is the anniversary of my dad's death, and we've had lights going on and off all day. We just gathered up our things and we left, and we never talked about that again until our 25th high school reunion. We all talked about it, and we all agreed that we saw the same thing, you know. And so I think that kind of sparked my interest. That, you know, that was one thing. And my mom always used to tell us a story about fortune telling, about how she and my dad, before they were married, they went to a fortune teller with another friend of my dad's, and the two guys had this fortune teller read their palms, And she told them the strangest thing. She said to them, you know, I just don't know what it is I'm seeing here. I'm seeing blue. There's nothing that I can see except for blue meets blue, and I don't know what that means. And that was in probably April of 1941. And Pearl Harbor happened then in December. And by the next year, both my dad and his friend were in flight training, and they flew in the South Pacific,
wow.
You know, where blue meets blue.
Yes.
So it was
oh, wow.
just one of those really weird things. And that always stuck with me. I always had my mom tell me that story over and over again. And when I asked my dad about it, he never wanted to talk about it. You know, he said, it's true that that's what happened, but I don't want to talk about
it. Oh, wow.
So that was interesting.
It is. And it ties, what I always find fascinating, is it ties history together so
yeah.
well.
I have these theories that sometimes the past does intersect with the present. And, you know, in my own house, we constantly, when we first moved in, would hear this radio in the night, and it was very, very staticky and very annoying. And a few years later, we met the very elderly gentleman and his sister who had grown up in our house, and they came to visit us several times. And one time we took them upstairs, and the gentleman turned to me and he said, oh, you know, now that I remember, we had this, we had Helena's very first radio operation set up in this room, and it took up the entire room. People came from all over Helena to hear my radio, and this was in the 1910s. And, you know, I said, Art, you know, sometimes we hear this radio in the night. He was an electrical engineer, and he turned to me and he said, you know, I'm not surprised that you hear that, because we played that radio so much, it's energy probably absorbed in the walls.
That
and,
makes sense.
You know, that was long before I ever started collecting ghost stories, but it made me think, you know, that people are made of energy, and so is electricity made of energy. And when those appliances are turned off or a person dies, what does happen to that energy that's still there? So I do believe that a lot of times when people hear footsteps in a house that's empty, or, you know, see a shadow or smell perfume or cigar smoke or something like that, you know, that it could be a person's energy that just for some reason or other in that moment in time, you know, intersects.
That makes sense.
If that makes sense.
It does. It does make sense. You know, like the story you talked with about the horse, that energy to let her know and to let the farmer, her owner know. And then also with the miners. I mean, that's a lot of blood, sweat, and tears these people put into that area.
Yeah, and there's a strong, you know, energetic impression that happens with things like that. And, you know, we tend to think of time as linear, but I imagine there's many different opportunities for those intersections to happen with both place and time, and because they're just dimensions. And those are fascinating tales.
Yeah. And, you know, sometimes, you know, other strange things happen, too. I don't know if anyone has ever visited the Sleeping Buffalo Rock, which is up along Highway 2, where the highway intersects with the road that goes to Saco.
I've heard of it.
And there is a very funky little kind of a covered air, a little... There's a little metal covered shed kind of, and in that little enclosure is this Sleeping Buffalo Rock, and the story of that rock is really interesting, and it's a true story about how this rock was, it's a big boulder, and it has the horns and the ribs carved into it, and it's something that Native Americans believe is very, very powerful medicine. But this rock there, this boulder, sat up high up on a ridge overlooking the Milk River, in a place where the river narrowed. So it was a place where all of the tribes crossed going into Canada hunting buffalo. And it was a place that was as sacred as a church. And even warring tribes never fought there, and there was never any kind of conflict because everyone knew about the Sleeping Buffalo Rock and its power. And it had this power because it had the power to fool people who thought it was real. And it looked like, up on this ridge, it looked like a sleeping buffalo with a few other smaller rocks with it that looked like, you know, smaller buffalo. And hunters would approach it thinking that it was, you know, something that they could hunt, and then they would get close and they would find that it was, no, it was just a boulder. And so its reputation grew, and all these stories grew out of it about how it could heal people who were sick and make the dead rise again, and all of these stories. And so the Highway Department, in its great wisdom, decided that it had to move the Sleeping Buffalo Rock from its ridgetop because it was in the way, in the 1930s, it was in the way of Highway 2, when Highway 2 was being built. So they moved the Sleeping Buffalo Rock, and they placed it. They found what they thought was the perfect place for it, and they put it in Trafton Park in Malta. And this is a lovely little park with very old cottonwood trees and shade, and it has a little a fence around this park. And so they put the Buffalo Rock right in the middle of this park. Well, it hadn't been there very long when people in the neighborhood began to call the police and say, there's this horrible noise coming from the park. It sounds like a bull buffalo bellowing, and it's really horrible. It sounds like this buffalo is in horrible distress. And the police would come, and they would enter the gate. They would hear it. And as they entered the gate of the park, the sound would stop. And as time went on, they began to notice that it seemed like the rock, the Buffalo Rock, was changing positions. And it was almost as if it was searching around the perimeter of the fence looking for a way to get out.
Ooh, chills.
Ooh, I know.
So it was moved again. And it was moved to the place where it is now, under this funky little shelter, kind of. And whether or not it bellows in the night, no one really knows, because there's no one around to hear it bellowing at such a remote place. But people still, you know, bring tributes to it. People will leave pennies and objects and ribbons and things like that. And it is still a very, very sacred object. I was told that recently the Department of Transportation is thinking about moving it again closer to its original place, because it is kind of a place where people dump trash, and that's really a shame. So anyway, if you've ever traveled up there, or if you never have, you should go and pay homage to the Buffalo Rock.
Yes, that's on the short list to visit now.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And part
All right.
of, part of that story, it reminded me of the story of White Sulphur Springs, too, where the Native American, you know, well before it was developed as a resort, the Native Americans, even if they were warring tribes, they wouldn't fight there. It was a place of peace and a place of healing.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
That struck me as a synergy with your story there. So I think that was very real.
Mm-hmm. There are, you know, I think hot springs were places that were considered sacred. Boulder Hot Springs is like that, too. In the Peace Valley, you know, there was never any conflict. Yeah.
Once again, it's that good energy that brings people together and keeps people together.
Actually, I have a very rather scary story, though, about another hot springs.
Really?
Please,
it's
yes.
It's actually not such a nice story. And, you know, I always say, never tell a story that I don't believe is true. But this is actually a legend. And I can't vouch for the truth of it. But it is a very old legend, and I think it's pretty interesting. Sleeping Child Hot Springs is south of Grantsdale in the Bitterroot Valley. I don't know if you know where that is. And there's a small creek with this hot springs, and these hot springs are the subject of these interesting legends. One story says that when Chief Joseph and his band of Nez Perce came over Lolo Pass and into the Bitterroot Valley in 1877, they split into two groups. They were fleeing General Howard. You probably know that story, and his soldiers. And so the two groups traveled separate routes. And one group followed a creek and discovered this beautiful hot springs. So they were afraid that there was going to be a battle, and so they left their children, their infants, at the hot springs, sort of covered over with all of this beautiful foliage. And there never was any conflict there, but when they came back, the children who had been protected along these springs were all sleeping very, very peacefully, and so they named the creek and the hot springs Sleeping Child. However, there's another legend that isn't so pleasant, and it's like earlier stories name the hot springs and the creek Weeping Child. And that's because the Indians long ago said that when a traveler passed near the springs, a crying child would draw him over there. And he would find a weeping child, this child just uncontrollably weeping. He would take it in his arms and comfort it, and the child would be very hungry. So he would offer his finger as a pacifier, and the child was so hungry it soon sucked all the flesh off his finger. Ooh. And then off his arm, and then all the flesh from his body, leaving only a skeleton. And the child would then disappear and lie in wait for another unsuspecting traveler to come along and suffer the same fate. And there was this huge pile of bones of all the victims at Weeping Child Hot Springs. So local settlers then renamed the springs and the creek Sleeping Child, thinking it's a better name for such a pastoral place. So.
It really brings a deeper thought to some of the names around the state and how their roots. And some of these stories are just fascinating. Are you interested in people's current tales? How do they connect with you online?
Of course, yes.
And how would they best connect with you online? I know your books are available in the History Museum and around Great Falls at bookstores, and always keep an eye out for Ellen Baumler's books. But how would they connect with you in a way that works best for you?
So I'm on Facebook, and they can message me that way.
Okay. We'll put links to that in the show notes.
Oh, that'd be great.
So, Ellen, are you doing any speaking this fall as well?
You know, I'm not really doing any. I'm trying not to do too much in October. My daughter is coming to visit from New Zealand, and we haven't seen her since 2019, before the pandemic.
Wow.
So I'm not really doing a lot of face-to-face things, doing a few Zoom programs. I do have one coming up in October, later on in October, at the Clancy Public Library, at the little schoolhouse museum there. And then I have another one at the in Clancy at the Legal Tender. And you can find that on their website.
Excellent.
Yeah. But I'm not doing too much, and we're not doing haunted tours this year. After 20 years, we're taking a little break.
Oh, okay. I was going to ask about that, so that's good
to
know.
Yeah, we did them. Yeah, I'm sorry not to do them, but it just became too difficult to schedule. So we're taking a little bit of a break, and maybe we'll do them again next year.
Excellent. Good, good. So to wrap up the show, do you have one more quick story for us by chance?
Well, here's another favorite story. This one takes place in Carbon County. There is a place between Joliet and Carbonado, which is fairly near Red Lodge. And there's a butte there that's named Stormont Butte after this old-timer named John Stormont, who had a herd of wild horses that he absolutely adored, and he spent all of his time sort of hunched over on this butte watching his horses to make sure that no one stole them. And he was a very strange character. He was a very short, less than 5 feet tall, and he had a long beard that came down to his knees. And he had these eyes that glittered in the dark. They really did glitter. I've seen a picture of him. He's pretty incredible looking. Anyway, he was a very unkempt man. And he used to tuck his beard in his belt, and then he would ride with his horses. And on the winds of a gathering storm, you could see his lantern light swaying in the wind, and you could hear his loud sort of cackle-like laugh on the wind. So I interviewed a lot of people who were descendants of people who knew him and heard a lot of stories about him. But The main thing is that when he died in 1898, he wanted no funeral. They wrapped him in his sugans, in his quilts, and buried him on the butte, as he had asked, and they marked his grave with this huge cross. It looks like two telephone poles fashioned into a cross. You could see it from the road. People who live near this butte claim that at night, sometimes they can see his lantern up on the butte. It'll appear on one end, and you blink, and then it's on the other side. And many people swear that his ghost horses thunder below the butte on the winds of a gathering storm. An old man Stormet's lantern sways above them, and his cackle echoes across the valley. So just imagine that. You know, that's a pretty, it's a pretty dramatic picture, I think.
I can imagine that, and I think that that's a testament to the power of your stories and how you tell them. And hopefully this is just part one of a series we can continue, because I really enjoyed this show.
Yes.
No, I'd love to come back. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Thank you so much, Ellen. We could definitely speak all afternoon, but we'll just have to pick another day.
Thank you.
Well, thank you once again. Welcome, everybody. This is Front Range Outdoors on KGPR Great Falls, and we've been having a delightful conversation with Ellen Baumler. Thanks again.
Thank you for listening. If you'd like more information about KGPR, please visit our website, kgpr.org, where you can find a link to donate, links to all of our other locally produced programming, and information about your local voice, KGPR Great Falls.
The sun's sinking low in the west, and I know another day on the range has gone by. We'll bed down the strays we've been gathering all day with a Montana love.